It's been a rough week, Justin. I'm going to be honest with you. Just because of, you know, unemployment life. There's a lot of like sitting around being like, am I supposed to be doing something right now? Because go ahead.
This is a false comparison, but I sometimes feel like that on summer break.
Yeah, no, it is similar though.
Yeah.
Where it's like, of course there's always things I should be doing, right? But now that my life has just turned into like, it's not free time exactly, but now that it's just turned into like just time, I'm like, what do I do?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And there's only so much like job hunting stuff you can do in a day, you know, because at a certain point it's just like, I have found the opportunities I've found today and that's kind of it. So to fill my time, I decided to do something that would make me happy and that would like help my mood. And I am platinuming Bloodborne.
Okay. All right. All right.
I have all but three trophies. And now, so I'm at the end. I mean, like I've been sitting at the end for a while. Now, Justin, you have mentioned to me in the past, you were impressed. I don't remember who it was. It was one of our friends. It might have been one of the Button Mashing 101 RIP guys who has like the Bloodborne Platinum. And you commented, and I remember this. You were like, I just couldn't do that because of the Chalice Dungeons. Now, if you're not familiar, Bloodborne has like the whole main shit that you do in it. And then also it has this side thing that you can do, and they're called Chalice Dungeons. They're not very well explained in the game. In my previous playthrough of the game, I didn't touch them. What they are is they are randomly generated, like seeded worlds that you just like load into. And they're just dungeons that like, you can just like play Bloodborne infinitely with like big quotes, like infinite possibilities. That's a fucking lie. Cause there's like five enemies in the dungeons and they're all the same and they're incredibly boring and uninteresting.
There's a couple of new ones for a few seconds, but then like you realize once you keep doing them that they're not anymore. It's the same.
Yes. But when you mentioned it and you were like, well, you know, you're like, I don't want to do the Chalice Dungeons. And I looked at the trophy list and I was like, Justin, like, you know, hey, we all are mistaken sometimes, but I was like, Justin, none of these are for the Chalice Dungeons. And then as I was completing the trophy list, I was like, oh, this boss that I haven't unlocked is not the secret final boss of the game trophy. This is the secret final boss of the Chalice Dungeon that you must complete all of the Chalice Dungeons.
Yeah.
To even attempt to fight.
Yeah.
I would not wish playing these Chalice Dungeons on my worst enemy. But I'm too deep. You know what I mean? At this point, I'm like, I'm almost done with, there's one called Defilement, which halves the entirety of your health. So you get hit one or two times and you are dead. And so it's not fun at all. It sucks terribly. And I'm on the final boss of that one. And then I have one more Chalice Dungeon. And then I have the dungeon with that final boss. And then I will be set free.
How long have you been playing it?
Bloodborne entirely, like in this run, or like just the Chalice Dungeons?
Let's just say the Chalice Dungeons solely.
This is going to sound ridiculous because it is, but remember everyone that I'm unemployed, 15 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
I was looking at this and I was like, oh, this was like what? Like an hour, 2 hours of just like grinding. And then I collected a bunch of materials. So to get the other Chalice Dungeons, by the way, like the materials to make these Chalice Dungeons, you have to play the Chalice Dungeons. So I assumed, I was like, well, I'm a high enough level, like let me just like pop in to the final one. And you simply cannot do that.
Yeah, you gotta like build up to it. Yes.
I'm in hell. I hate it. And also like the Chalice Dungeons are like they get significantly harder than the base game. So I still have the final boss fight to do in the game that I'm way the fuck over leveled for. I beat it at level 80 in my first playthrough because I can see the saves and stuff. I'm level like 120 right now. Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna just fly through that fight, which kind of sucks because I like a tough boss fight. But
Because you can't beat it, and like you have to beat the
if you beat the final boss, it just immediately pushes you into New Game Plus. So I'm just gonna show up and I'm gonna be like, "Hey, motherfucker!" like bomb on.
Are you gonna save scum it so you don't have to play it three times?
I have already done that. So I played it once. So I got a bunch of the trophies and stuff. The first playthrough, and I did one ending. And there's three endings in the game. There's like one ending where basically this the final. Like confrontation, the guy's like, just lay down your life and you'll just wake up and you'll be fine, and he just kills you and there's no fight. So I didn't do that one, so I just cloud saved it to be able to do that. And then there is the ending where you have to eat the three umbilical cords to access the final boss.
Yeah.
And so I have collected four umbilical cords, believe it or not. Then the rest of the trophies are pretty simple. Other than the one thing is like, hey, there's secretly 15 hours of Chalice Dungeons you have to do to get this one trophy.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it really came down to I was on the process of doing that. And like, I'm looking at mine and let's see. There's one Chalice Dungeon, the Chalice of Ice that I didn't do. And then there's a couple of like optional like bosses and a couple of like getting all the weapons that I didn't do, but I just stopped that knowing that like it didn't make sense to do like the weapons grind, get all the hunter weapons and special tools because I was not going to get the platinum. And it's not like I enjoyed the game that much that I was going to get all but one trophy, you know?
Had I known what this Chalice Dungeon thing actually was, because also in all the guides it's just like, well, just complete this one, then complete this one, then complete this one, you're done.
Sounds easy.
I'm like,
easy?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I known, I probably would not have. But
holy shit, I played this game in May of 2015.
That's like right when it came out.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was into this when it came out, but yeah, I think it came out in 2014, right? Or is it 2015?
I thought it was 2015, but I could be wrong.
Whenever it came out specifically, I either finished... I played it right away. I got really into it.
March 2015 is Bloodborne.
Oh, my God, yeah. So March... What, is there a specific day on that?
March 24th, 2015.
Oh, my first trophy popped on March 27th.
What was I doing March 24th, 2015? I was a junior in high school,
Okay. I was
probably getting ready for the musical.
I was waiting for this, I think.
Yeah, I bet.
Because this is like when my season's over and that part of the year.
I was
going to
say,
so
like at that
timing.
Point, like you were just done. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I got the craving of like, I'm just going to play Bloodborne. Because like, okay, now that I've played it twice, can I... give two hot takes.
Okay.
Hot take number one, this... Okay. I'm like looking out the window to make sure I don't get fucking sniped by it. By someone. Game doesn't need to be remastered. There are some annoying things about it, like that I think that like a simple patch would be able to fix. For example, your items don't restock automatically. The only things that restock when you die are your blood vials and your bullets. Everything else is just in the hunter's dream and in your chest. So I assume I'm out of antidotes, and turns out I had a fucking 100 of them, but like, that's weird. I think you just restock like
that'd be really cool. Specifically like consumables like that. Send to your inventory. Yeah. That makes sense.
You can't freely travel between the lamps, so you have to sit through two loading screens if you want to fast travel. That kind of sucks. I also think, just in general, you should be able to level up at the loading at the bonfire light things. Like, I just don't know why you need to make me do two loading screens in order to level up.
Isn't that similar in a lot of the Souls games, though? Like,
yeah, so it is like that in... Actually, it is like that in all of them. But there are things you can do at the bonfires in general, and that you just simply like at the in Bloodborne, it's just literally just teleportation thing. But also, it's funny, like in retrospect, knowing how this game was made. So Hidetaka Miyazaki, who's like the guy, the FromSoft guy, didn't work on Dark Souls 2. Instead, after Dark Souls 1, him and his team went and did Bloodborne, and a different team did Dark Souls 2. And so this game is sort of like, didn't learn the lessons from Dark Souls 2 quite exactly. Do you know what I mean? Because it was still operating with a lot of like the older design from Dark Souls 1, which I think is kind of just kind of interesting in terms of like how it's designed and like some of those elements that are, you're just like, yeah, this just would have been like streamlined in a better way. The loading screens also leave something to be desired, believe it or not.
Are the times long on the loading screens? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it wouldn't be like, it's not a huge deal in like Dark Souls 3, in my opinion, because the loading screens are like really quick. But in this, you have to sit through two to fast travel. You know, it's just like, hey, please don't do that.
Yeah.
But, and also, like, here's the thing. It plays, you know, it's at 30 FPS, which is jarring when you first start it, if you've been used to playing 60 FPS all year. And then you just go, oh, this is fine. Like, after, like, 20 minutes or so, you're just like, this is normal. This is fine. Would I like this game played at a higher frame rate? Of course, sure. But, like, I think it looks really good. I think its art direction, art design holds up really well. Most things about it holds up really well. I don't necessarily think this needs a remaster.
Would you play it again if it was remastered, or is it like you're done?
When? You know what I mean? Like, next week? Probably not.
Next year?
Next year? Around Halloween time? Yeah. Because also, it's quick. I mean, like I finished it and did all of the optional bosses that I missed the first time around, and I've got all the things to team me up for the final, like the secret ending, in less time than it took me to beat it the first time,
yeah,
which was like 15 hours. So it's like, it's pretty quick. And I feel like I explored a lot, you know, like I found a lot of stuff that, yeah, I missed the first time around and whatever. So yeah, like I would give it a shot and maybe I tried a new weapon this time. might do something similar if I were to play it again. But as it stands right now, I don't feel a need to ever play this again unless
they have a remaster
or some sort of, you know, thing for it.
Before we get into it, tell me,
yeah,
right now, after replaying it, rank your Souls games.
So this is the other hot take I have. It's not that it's not good. I played the fuck out of this in 1 week. Do you know what I mean? Like I sat down and it was like, I looked at Elaine and I was like, I just need to get that out of my system. You know what I mean? Like, I was also having one of those, like, could a depressed person do this? Bloodborne Platinum?
Yes.
But so, but my hot take is like, it's good. It's really good. But I think its setting and theme is way better than the actual game is. I like it, but my ranking is number one, Sekiro, number two, Dark Souls 3, number three, Elden Ring, number four, Bloodborne, number five. It doesn't matter.
I mean, that,
the rest are, I haven't finished. Or Demon Souls, I finished, but.
But like, that's still considering up there.
And well, it's at the bottom of the ones I played.
Yeah.
And like finish. It's better than Demon Souls.
Yeah, is it better than 2?
I like Bloodborne, and I have tried to play Dark Souls 2 several times now, even post having my like Dark Souls is really good like epiphany, and I can't play that game.
Yeah,
so,
well, I mean,
yeah,
to me, I don't think that's controversial as like necessarily, because all those games that you listed are like good games. You know what I mean?
Oh, I would like. Tell anyone, like, play any of these games. Like, pick, yeah, whichever one looks like your shit and play it, and you'll like it.
Yeah.
If you're, like, a Nightmare Before Christmas kid in high school, then you play this game, you'll like it a lot.
Yeah. I think it's one of my favorites because it was my first one that I played.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's probably number two. I'd go Elden Ring, Bloodborne, Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 3, Sekiro, some space,
yeah,
Demon Souls, more space, yeah, Dark Souls 2,
yeah, that's one. The thing about like Demon Souls 2 is it's like, it's good, but it's like kind of it's more fascinating than it is good. Does that kind of make sense? Like, I think it's cool to like go back and play an old game because you're like, oh, I see like what this became. It's cool to go back and play Halo 1 because I like it, first of all, but then also because you're like, oh, I see how this was limited at the time that they've made half a game and they're like, fuck, we don't have a budget. We'll just play the entire game backwards. You know what I mean? Add new enemies and stuff.
I think like it doesn't like a game like Dark Souls holds up in its age.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I don't think Demon Souls necessarily holds up in the same way. There's like, you can see the influences, but it's I wouldn't, yes, say it's like one of the best games ever.
No, It's a really interesting stepping stone to like how we got to where all video games are now. Like literally every video game is pretending to be this, you know?
Which I'm really glad they made a remake of it that updated everything.
Yeah.
Made the whole game super modern and they changed everything about the other game.
Well, but that's what's interesting though. That's why I appreciate it as a like re-release, right? Because it's like, oh, this is like a remake in visuals alone.
Yeah.
So it's a remaster. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. And then the rest of this is just this old janky ass PS3 game, which I think is like, that's what I appreciate about it. The only thing I would wish about that game is if it just had a button, like, funny enough, Halo Anniversary had, that you just push and then it just lets you back to the old school graphics. So you can kind of like compare.
Well, one is a remaster, one is a remake by title alone. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So
I think Bloodborne is cool too because it is, I think it's a very simple game. It drops a lot of the kind of like archaic bullshit of like, what is a quip load? Do you know what I mean? And like, what is the difference between faith and like intelligence? You know, like why do you need to know those things?
Yeah.
Bloodborne is like, there's one way to play, kind of.
And it goes back to, that's why I like that game, and that's why I like Lies of P a lot, because they simplified some of the complex stuff that if you really dive into the complexities of Dark Souls 1 and Elden Ring, it's awesome. But like sometimes just a streamlined, simple game.
It's nice because like sometimes I just want a game to be like, don't worry about that. Like you could if you want to, but like, shh, don't worry about it. So that was my intro for today because we have a lot to discuss in terms of the news and stuff, and I figured we might as well dip right into that quick, you know, in just, you know, 3-4 minutes.
It's a good oops, all intros. Oh wait, no,
that was on, everyone. Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 243. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, you're doing well, I presume? School's almost out.
It almost is out. We had graduation this past Sunday. Okay. So all the seniors are no longer in the building, and I got to be at graduation. And like, I know that sounds like sometimes it's people's like hell, but it's kind of a fun experience for me specifically for two reasons. First reason.
One.
I work with our graduation speaker every year, and this year I really like them. So it was nice to like work with them on that and kind of like say goodbye to them. And like, they even got to sit next to me before they read their speech. So it was just a nice little moment.
Yeah. Cool.
Now the second reason was that I was kind of glad to be there, but it was more than me just sitting there listening to a graduation. Peter, I read the names of all the graduating seniors.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yes, it is,
stressful, I imagine, though.
Yeah, for a lot of, like, I can read names.
Sure.
Like, they do a good job of, like, getting pronunciations and stuff like that, because I can read names, but I mispronounce them a lot. So they had all the seniors, like, either say their name or write out their name phonetically. But a couple things, people's phonetically doesn't follow a set of standards, so it's like, I don't understand, like, what do you mean? Is that a ba or a ba? Like, what is that? What are you talking about? How do I say your last name is, whatever. So they have those written out so you can kind of practice it, but it's not just reading the names. I wish it were, because then, when they're coming up, the first thing they do is they hand you a card with their name on it. And I know you could just read that name theoretically, but like, it's only their name and it doesn't have any of the phonetical stuff or any of the notes in it or whatever. So then I have to cross-reference that card they give me with my list of notes. And then I have to say that name while also making sure that the other name reader isn't talking. And if the person's giving me some criticism about how to say their name at the same time, it's like 12 things at once that are going through your brain. And like, it was just a lot on that aspect of it. But once you got through like the first 200, things just flew by. You know what I mean?
And I also have to imagine it's stressful too, because I mean, you're just like, you will have the mic.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like, hey, don't mess this up. This is like an extremely important moment for this person.
Right.
You know?
Right. And like, I'm someone that like feels comfortable with a mic to like be up there and like, you know, deal with things as they happen. But this is like a different thing because it is really not about me. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yes.
like, not that usually it is, but like, it's so like, I'm just such a little part of this that it's not my job to steal the show. Because if you talk about the name reader, there's something wrong with the graduation ceremony. You know what I mean?
100%.
So that was a little bit of an experience for me, but it was at least like an engaging way to be a part of that, because it is nice to say goodbye to my seniors. And also with all those other things I was doing, if there was one of my seniors that I knew, I would also have like a little moment with them, like eye contact, a smile, say their name, sometimes mispronounce their name on purpose because they wanted me to, you know, whatever.
It's nice. Like, we've definitely talked about this before, and like, I've talked about this about like you specifically even, but like, there's just something so, in my opinion, like I look back and like, good teachers changed my life. You know what I mean? Like 100% changed who I became. And like, it is nice having that moment when it's like, and now you're not my teacher anymore.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And, like, and literally. Like,
and you know, like, because you helped me, you know what I mean? Get through all, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that went well. And I'm also happy to hear that it means, you know, you're almost...
I got a week left, except the rude thing about it is that we have our little 3-day weekend. Was that Memorial Day?
Next week is a 3-day weekend?
Yeah, I think so.
It is.
Yeah. So we have
all my days are, I'm weekends. I forgot.
So we have 3-day weekend, but then we have to come back for 3 hours for teacher meetings on that Tuesday. Like that sucks. Is like the worst joke ever, but whatever. Yeah. It'll be fun.
Well, Justin, let's take a look at our hot dog count real quick. I'm at 89. You're at 145. I ran out of dogs this week and haven't had a chance to go restock.
Yeah. I had a measly only 12 this week after a solid 3 in average the last week.
I admire you. I admire that. Here's a quick preview.
I'm switching up the hot dogs, though, so I'm not just eating the same type of link. So this weekend I had some of my traditional Oscar Mayer's. Then I had some other ones that are like just some like all beef ones. And then I had some like veggie ones, which we count those, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I will not discriminate.
Yeah, so I had some veggie ones too. So I'm splitting it up, so I'm not going crazy over here, but...
Sure, sure. Well, Justin, here's a quick preview of what is coming up in the news. Kojima is worried about dying, and he's been talking about it. And it's been a bad week for PlayStation. Normally, we list 3 things here, but it was just such a bad week for PlayStation that is going to be a majority of our show. Justin, here's a quick reminder to our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham for an additional 30-minute bonus episode every single week. You can follow us on Blue Sky at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Nothing but... I know you've been playing Clair Obscur.
Okay, yes. And?
Have you made any progress with that?
A little bit. I've been playing around with it and like trying to understand a little bit about if I like it or dislike it. I think, I'm not trying to be like contrarian here. The game I want to be mean. It feels like it was made by a smaller studio.
It does. I completely agree.
And what I mean by that, there's just like this level of like polish on top of it that is missing. There have been several times where I've gotten stuck inside geometry. There's times when like you load up the game and like you flash to a cutscene and you see a quick flash of like your character loading into the world during the cutscene. There's even just like moments and stuff like that where I think like the lip syncing isn't quite there where it needs to be. And like just some of the stuff is like a little bit not polished. In a way that it's not like taking me out of the game, but like it's notable. And I've been like running into those moments more and more as I keep playing it. The second thing is that the game lacks, a way for me to easily track side quests in a way that I wish it did, because you start getting away from these places, like the very beginning that you want to go back to and think about, but like, you're not like given ways to remember about this stuff unless you're like taking notes or a journal and stuff like that. And that's kind of like frustrating a little bit, because I feel like I'm kind of moving ahead at a very quick pace. And sometimes in these games, I like to like go about and explore my world around me a little bit. And I think it's hard for me to do that just with the side quest being, is this a side quest or just a cool environmental thing I ran into?
There was a split in the road and I was like, okay, this side actually seems really big. So I think it's the way, like I went down one path thinking that it wasn't the way to go. And then I was like, oh, this area is like actually kind of huge. I think this is the way to go. Let me go double back and just like pick up whatever item is surely at the end of that one little path. And then that took me into the cutscene that ends Act 1. which, have you gotten there yet?
No.
Gotcha. I've not picked it up since this happened. Just because I've been
occupied with Dungeon.
Yeah. Yeah. But... as you do not go back. I think you can go back to that area eventually, but like, I'm not gonna now because I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna move on. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I totally get what you're saying. Like, I just wish there was a way to determine. Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, I played a lot of I have not played a ton of like 2025 games this year. A lot of my gaming time has been like devoted to older games. And Dead Space 2 does this immaculately. I think all of them do it, but I just especially remember it in Dead Space 2. You click down like the right stick and then he just like puts down like a little like light and it shows you the direction of which way to go. And so literally anytime there's a fork in the road, you just go which way? Beep, and like, oh, that's the objective. I'm not going that way. You know what I mean? And it's just like such an easy way to go like, oh, I know exactly the way I want to go so that I know exactly what I'm going to find. And then I'll be able to come back this way whenever I'm ready.
Also, just a little side note, too, kind of cutting ahead. I played a little bit of Oblivion and like they have the clairvoyance spell, which I did not use before this. And it kind of helps you exactly with that.
It tells you where to go.
And it allows you to be like, all right, that's my path. So I'm going to go over here and see what's over here. And I've been kind of like using that where I've never used that when I played Oblivion. It's probably in Skyrim, I would assume.
I bet, right?
Like I've never used it before and I'm like, oh fuck, this is actually really helpful. I wish I used it earlier. But anyway, so there's that like stuff about it, like the quest log's a little bit frustrating. The general like exploring the worlds with sometimes how vulnerable I feel, I don't necessarily want to explore every corner of an area because I don't know if it's where I'm supposed to be going, if there's going to be a hidden area where something there, if it's going to be a cutscene that kind of moves my progress forward or something like that. It's just, I wish there was a better mapping system for both quests and where I was in the game. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the third thing I'm kind of deciding with is, do I like the combat? Is it new so I'm learning the combat? Or is it just something that it's meshing things that I don't know if it's meshing in the way I want it to? Because I think there is something inherently frustrating about a game that is requiring the thinking and the planning of a turn-based game that you kind of need in terms of like leveling up your build and like what moves you're using and how to use your skill points that is also determined by... not necessarily like random, but like a lot of the times these like skill checks that are such a action-based thing that you have to do, whether it's dealing with, you know, trying to aim your gun at a weak point and like the stupid like little like rib moves just in front of it at like the right moment, or it's like you're trying to like time a thing and you're in your head being like, should I dodge or should I try to parry in this moment? Like I can't mess up, so I need to dodge, but then like you also kind of mess up the timing because the dodge timing is a little bit different than the parry timing. So it's like this kind of stuff that I almost wish that it was more like the Final Fantasy VII remake kind of combat style that had the active time stuff a little bit more in the forefront with kind of like balancing while you're worrying about parrying in the real moment. Like it's, again, I'm not saying I don't like the combat. I'm just trying to decide where I fall in the whole thing because it is so different and new, which I guess is good for a game to have like kind of a unique combat style. But I've been having a hard time truly sitting down and enjoying it, and I'm still questioning if I like it.
I don't think you're wrong, and I think we talked about this last week where you said like this game is good, whatever they make next is gonna be really good because they're just gonna refine and learn and refine, which is exactly how I feel. But
And then the last thing, I do think some of the cutscenes and stuff like that are a little like melodramatic.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I am interested by the world and the story, but like it's like I don't think I'm necessarily at this point where I'm like liking a lot of the characters enough. And like I think I'll get there eventually, but there's just something that's like a little bit off with me in the story right now. Not in terms of like the big picture stuff, but kind of like the short chops of when I'm getting cutscenes and stuff moving forward with it. That all being said, I'm like 10 hours in, maybe not even. So like I'm still pretty early in it, and there's plenty of stuff that I'm going to be coming back to this game that I like. But like it's still in that like really developing what my opinion of this game is. Whereas I thought the first 2 hours, this would be a lock for a top game of the year for me. It's slowly starting to become that question about like, is this a top game? Is this an okay game? Or is this not a game for Justin?
I like this game. I do not know if it is like, everyone is like, this is my best game of the year, game of the year, game of the year. And I'm like looking at like Ghost of Yote and Death Stranding 2. And I'm like, I don't know, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, so I'm on the same page. You have played some Oblivion?
Yeah. So I famously have told you that I like to play on my backbone, and I've been playing a lot of like stuff on my backbone on my Xbox. Recently, though, I think this has been like 2 weeks, they took the remote play features out of the Xbox app, and they have to be accessed through like the online, the website online.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So on the Xbox app, you can't remote play anymore. You have to go to like Xbox.com or whatever it is, and then you have to play remote play through the website. You do that for that and cloud gaming, right?
Why would they do this?
I don't know. Streamlining, something stupid. I don't know. But the annoying thing is that my phone never like remembers my Microsoft ID. And for the past 2 weeks since this has been happening, every time I play, I don't know what my password was. I forget my password. I have to re-log in. And what starts down this rabbit hole of me redoing everything. And then when you change your password, I can't get onto my Xbox. So if I am in bed, like trying to play this before I go to bed, I can't play remote play on my Xbox. So then I've been going into cloud streaming. Same thing applies where it takes me like 10 minutes to like log into cloud streaming because like I forget my password and all that kind of shit like that. It's a me problem to a certain point, but like
But here's the thing too. Like for me, the reason why I like this Switch so much is that you literally pick it up and you're in a game
and you're there.
Seconds.
And that's why I like the portal too. You literally turn on, you cannot fuck it up. But like, it used to be pretty easy in the app. And then sometimes there'd be some times where there'd be like an update on my Xbox and I have to like log in again, but I wouldn't know that and would like have trouble connecting and be like, oh, I got to log it in. But now it's like there's 13 different things I have to play. And it's never as easy as me just touching an app and me playing it. Like right now I have the cloud gaming and the remote play things saved on my phone. And if I go to log in, the first thing that that tells me on the app is, sorry, we can't log into your account. We're having trouble logging to account. So that link, that thing I have saved on my home screen to immediately get to cloud streaming doesn't work. And there's nothing that I can do to fix it right now. And it's just, it's very annoying. And it's to the point where something that I've been playing, I was playing almost, you know, 5-6 times a week before, it's something that now I'm like dreading playing it and dreading like touching my Xbox on remote play because it's such a hassle for me to do. And I'm sure there's things I could try to like work around, but like right now it's to the point where I don't want to play it that much that I want to create a hack around it. I just want it to be convenient, and it's been very upsetting for me.
Yeah, that's irritating. Yeah. I do get that. And just that whole idea of like, this should be easy. And you're fucking this up by not making this easy and seamless. When what is also so frustrating about that is like, that's Xbox's whole thing is like pretending like it is.
And it's clearly not, because it's not working. Maybe if I had a Microsoft device, it would be fine. And they're just fucking me because I have an Apple, but like whatever. But anyway, so I've been playing Oblivion on cloud streaming pretty much exclusively.
Okay. How's that going?
I think the game is better than I remember, but it's also the game that I remember. And I don't
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, and better than I remember, because I think I played it, like I must have played it right when the game came out. I have my PlayStation. But like when I played it. I just kind of went through it, and I didn't really like engage in it in the same way. But now I'm like kind of slowing down and like playing a little bit more. Other than just being a sword build, I'm summoning things, and I have a lot more fun doing that. And I'm kind of going outside of the main story a little bit, which I think was what my problem was with the other game, was I was just streamlining, going through the game instead of exploring it more. And the world does feel a lot bigger than it did when I played it before, instead of it just being like a more linear path that I think I was going on. So I'm playing it just kind of in my downtime, because I can't really play Clair Obscur on my remote play because the text is too small.
Oh, because you're playing it on
remote play. So playing Clair Obscur, I have to anyway. You don't want to play Clair Obscur on your remote play anyway, because if there's any lag, you mess up all your parries and it's annoying. So
yes, 100%.
So I've been playing that a little bit, but yeah, I think I'll probably be like going back and forth between these two games for the foreseeable future, because they're great games.
Well, there you go. I just played Bloodborne this week. That's it. I played some Oblivion. I accidentally entered the Shivering Isles DLC on the way to a different quest, and I was like, oh, I don't want to be here. I'm holding off on that. Justin, you want to join me in the news?
Let's go.
Tough to know where to start this week. A lot of bad, a lot of weird, bad stuff. We'll start with Kojima. Hideo Kojima of Kojima Productions. Don't know why they named it that. Has said that he's been thinking about death lately. Let me just read you the beginning of this article by Andy Robinson on VGC titled, Hideo Kojima says he's left a staff a USB stick of game ideas for after he dies. Metal Gear creator Hideo Kojima says he's reevaluated his priorities since turning 60 and becoming severely ill during the pandemic, and has even left a will containing game ideas for staff to use after his death. Kojima turned 60 during the production of Death Stranding 2, but the game designer told Edge magazine in its latest issue that an illness he suffered during the pandemic was what most inspired him to seriously consider what to do with his remaining years. It also stirred the game auteur to consider the future of his studio, he said, which is why he's decided to take on numerous projects such as the Sony action espionage game Pheasant, Xbox-backed OD, and the upcoming sequel to Death Stranding. And he says that he made a USB stick full of video game ideas for his eventual passing that he's given to his studio. Obviously, not expecting that to be anytime soon, but that, hey... you know, that it comes for us all eventually. I don't know if it goes into it in this article, but it said that he was having a tough time after some deaths in his circle over the past several years. And he was talking to some of his friends about what do I do? And they were like, you should do what you do best, and you should make things that resonate with people. And he's like, OK, I can do that. what do you think? It's kind of a bummer. It makes me like get choked up a little bit with like how bittersweet that sounds. But what do you think of this?
I know this comes from a real place for him probably, but with Kojima, what's the catch? You know what I mean? Like, I can't help but think there's some sort of catch here. Like, Peter, you're telling me in 2025, we're handing out USB drives, thumb drives to people with sensitive information about our next game on there?
Sensitive information. I think it's just like a Google, like not Google, but like a Word document that just says like game about mailman who has to travel across the United States.
People are going to read this. It's not going to make any sense to them. Or it's going to be like, you make the games now, and that's all that's on it.
Oh, see, that like chokes me up a little bit, where they're like, you know, it's like break in case of Kojima death, and like, you know, after the funeral, they're like, oh, it's like we gotta get that USB out, and they like put it in, and it's like, I've taught you everything you need to know.
Like, maybe. But like, I don't know, it also seems like weird to a certain degree, like he just had like, it's like his notebook or something like that, like, but even then, he's not dead now, so he's still gonna be adding to it. Brother, we live in a place where you can have a cloud, a phone app, a running Google Doc in the world. You're gonna die. It's not like your entire profile is gonna delete, unless that is. And if that is the case, you are literally making the game of your death. Kojima, if you're gonna do that, if you're gonna die, make it a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he's an interesting guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
or they put the USB stick in their computers at Kojima Studios, and he's like, the AI has arisen, and then he's just
it's
like,
just him. It's a digital brain.
Back.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. I don't know. Just like a bittersweet thing thinking about just how life happens, you know? And that, you know, sometimes we can't control where we go.
I pulled up this Wikipedia article and that the usual USB drive can last between 10 and 100 years. So that means
kind
he either has
range.
10 more years left or 100 more years left. And I'm leaning towards 100 knowing that, man.
Dude, I hate that. Don't you hate that when it's like basically they're just like shrugging going, I don't know. You
like,
know what I mean? Like,
it's,
like,
it's 1 year, you know,
1 year
humans,
or 1,000. Cool.
Humans can die in infancy or live to like 200.
Yeah. And it's like, cool. What the fuck do I do with that information? like, awesome. No help. Like, just no help. Let's, here's another quick one, Justin. Forbes. According to Forbes, from Paul Tassi, Helldivers 2 Studios' next game will be free from PlayStation partnership. So Arrowhead Studios, the creators of Helldivers, announced that they are working on, beginning the stages of working on their next game, and that it is not funded by PlayStation, which Helldivers 2 was, that was published by them and funded by them. But yeah, so they announced that the next game is 100% funded by ourselves, so we will call 100% of those shots. I think that a lot of people sort of took that one direction, but they responded saying, when someone was like, you know, are you unhappy with how PlayStation treated you? And they said, no way. PlayStation are great. There would be no Helldivers if it wasn't for them. We're open to working with them again in the future. They are incredibly game dev oriented, solid partners. And this is me just saying it like it is, not blowing smoke up their asses. So I'm willing to accept that that's probably how they feel, but I'm also willing to accept that there were some reasons why they said, no, we're not going to work with PlayStation. Do you know what I mean? I think the truth probably exists in the middle there, that they're like, you know, it was a really good experience for us. But I think back to like, they got in a lot of trouble for how they handled the messy launch of that game, in that PlayStation wasn't ready for a lot of those things. And then when like the CEO was like, hey, wait to buy the game until, you know, we can solve these issues. Like, don't buy the game if, you know, I don't want you to like waste your weekend or waste your money on a game that you can't play right now. They got in some trouble. I think they had to fire someone over that or something like that. But what do you think?
I think a lot to do with that too. Like, obviously, like, a company is going to do what's going to be in the best interest for them. They're probably successful enough and living well enough off of Helldivers that they do not need to have that kind of partnership anymore. It could also be in a response to something like that. Like, this has happened before where these studios partner with PlayStation, have a successful game, PlayStation comes in and buys them, and maybe they have no interest in that. They don't want to have that kind of ownership, and they clearly stated, like, this is us saying we don't want to be bought by PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just a way for PlayStation to throw more money at them, and they eventually do get bought by PlayStation. Who knows? But I don't think that's a bad thing, because a game like Helldivers would have benefited by being in more places. Not that the game wasn't successful, but sometimes like a game like that could be limited potentially by only being stuck with PlayStation and PC stuff. So maybe they're thinking bigger picture with how to do it, because I guarantee you the next thing from this studio is going to demand attention from people, not just former Helldivers, but like new people coming in too because of what they did with Helldivers.
100%. I think like I am on board with whatever they're going to make next. Yeah, I'm interested, right? Like, I'm very interested, because I had no interest leading up to the game coming out, and then it came out, and I was like, this is the most fucking fun game of the year,
right,
you know?
Right.
I totally agree with you. I also, like, it's nice to hear, I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh my gosh, like, I hope they buy them. And I'm like, I'm just glad that, like, they didn't, and that this studio is able to just remain independent, because, like, you know, as much as there is the, you know, a lot of studios have talked about, hey, there is a financial stability in being owned by a major publisher like, you know, PlayStation. It also means that you are not in charge of your lives anymore, your work lives anymore, right? I mean, everyone thought Bungie being bought by PlayStation was going to be a good thing. And what's that resulted in? Layoff. People moved to other teams, layoffs, closures. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that being owned by one of these major publishers at this point is I think it's like the devil you know or the devil you don't. And I think that's the tough thing.
Well, I think it's a missed opportunity, because when I think of live service multiplayer games, the one thing I think about is Sony right now, you know? So like, if Helldivers wants to keep living, Like, boy, they are missing out partnering with Sony again.
Let's talk about it. You remember Fair Games?
Yeah.
I remember Fair Games. Fair Games is an upcoming live service game coming out of Sony. This is one of the 12 that they had, which they have significantly pared back on. I think it's one of the two or three that they have actually in development, because they've got the Horizon one. Or did that get canceled?
I don't know.
Horizon multiplayer game. Horizon Online Project not canceled. Clarification okay. from 3 months ago. So that's still in the works. Obviously, they have Marathon, which we'll talk about. And then Fair Games. And then they canceled like their God of War one, their Last of Us one. Concord obviously died of swift and quick death. Fair Games is like it's a PvPvE extraction shooter, because we need more extraction shooters, apparently. But the studio that was created for it, it's called Haven Studios, was led by a woman named Jade Raymond. Jade Raymond, I'm trying to remember what her repertoire was. I remember when she signed on for it, she was impressive. Let's see here.
What?
I mean, oh, yeah, she's big in Assassin's Creed and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so she was big in the creation of the Assassin's Creed franchise and series when it first started, and things like Watch Dogs and stuff like that. She worked a lot with like Amy Hennig on the Star Wars games and stuff like that before Amy Hennig went off and worked on Uncharted and Naughty Dog stuff. So she is someone who I would trust with these sorts of games and with game quality in general. But she has left her studio, Haven Studios, apparently, according to Jason Schreier at Bloomberg. PlayStation leadership didn't give Haven staff a reason for her departure, but it came several weeks after an external test of Haven's first game, the online shooter Fair Games, which, by the way, dropped the money sign. That's why I put it in our doc as Fair Games with the money sign and then parentheses without the money sign. S is no longer a money sign.
Oh.
According to people with knowledge of the matter, some developers at Haven were concerned about how the game was received and its progress, said the people who asked not to be identified because they weren't authorized to speak publicly. So there you go. What do you think of this?
Not surprising. I mean, I think... No. Unfortunately, like Jade Raymond aside, whatever, I don't think a name necessarily helps with the problem that Sony is facing right now, that there's not a market for a lot of these games that are out there. And on top of that, the games that they're making are not quality and unique enough to deserve attention in a way that gets people excited. Again, you said extraction shooters. Maybe 5 years ago, that would be an exciting thing to say. But even then, there are extraction shooters and stuff like that out there that are way more accessible and easy to play.
What is happening where, like, everyone is like, we love extraction shooters. Like it's not the people that play games are like, we love extraction shooters. It's like the studios are like, we're all doing extraction shooters now. And it's like,
why?
This was like, it's 2018. You missed this by... 6, 7, 8 years. So yeah, I'm also not entirely surprised. I will be actually surprised if this game comes out, to be honest with you.
At this
feels
point,
like something
yeah.
to be canceled.
Like, and it's sus that this happened. Oh, you sus that I used it correctly.
You did great.
Thank you. That it happened after the initial playtest came out too. Whether or not this was a choice that she made, was made, or like a mutual thing, you know what I mean? Like,
are you ever kind of like, it's not really, you're not really feeling it. And then it's like, give me a reason. And then a reason comes along and you're like, all right.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I don't know. Maybe the game's not very good. Or maybe I'm in my head about it. And then you like the game, they do play testing and they're like, it's not very good. And she's like, okay, actually I'm out.
A real world example at our high school, the talent show that we used to have every year was dying hard. Like, we had a bag axe to go into it. Like, it used to be like you'd have like 20 people audition. You'd cut some that needed
to be
cut.
It used to be like a big deal. When I was in school, it was like a big deal to be in the talent show.
But then it wasn't. And then you started having to get anyone to do it. And then you couldn't find people to work it. You couldn't find any of it. And we put one together with like 7 of the worst acts that I've ever seen in my life. And then COVID happened and I was just stoked. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, thank God. And part of it was like it would have been not a great experience for some of those acts, but they were there and we couldn't cut them to have two. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I totally like it was like one of those things that probably just happened. So Jade Raymond's like, oh, darn, let's try something else.
Yeah. She's going to be just fine. She has a solid resume of games and all that. But
nothing out since 2017.
Which was Star Wars Battlefront 2. Yeah. No one talk about that. Hey, it's beloved now. It's beloved now. It's beloved now. What? She was in charge of all the bugs? Come on now. She was the bug squasher? All right. Okay, here's another bit of Sony news. You know how everything costs more now? And yeah. We're all kind of like, you know, so obviously Nintendo hiked its prices. Xbox has hiked its prices significantly. Everyone's kind of looking at PlayStation. Let me read you this headline here from The Verge by Dominic Preston. Sony considers PS5 price hikes to cover Trump's tariffs. Let me read you this here. Sony just announced its financial forecast for the next year, and it's expecting to be impacted by tariffs to the tune of 100 billion yen, about $680 million. To compensate, the company says it's considering options including moving manufacturing to the U.S. and increasing prices for consumers. Speaking to investors during the company's earnings calls, Sony CFO Lin Tao confirmed that the company is considering, quote, passing on the price of tariffs to consumers in order to mitigate the impact on its bottom line. Tao didn't mention the PS5 by name, though, and it's possible that Sony could try to protect pricing on its consoles, though, through increasing prices elsewhere in its electronic business. Sony's already increased the price of the newest PS5 this year, but only in the UK, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. I would not be surprised if this happens. I know they mentioned here moving production to the US. A lot of... I'm not calling the Sony leadership ignorant, but I'm calling the people who are like, why don't they just make Switches in the United States? I am calling those people ignorant because it's just like, that's just not how it works. Well, first of all, workforce isn't there. Second of all, you're going to have to build all that. It's going to cost millions and millions of dollars to set that up. And then also, all of your fucking computer chips are imported from elsewhere.
Right, right. Like
you have to create an entire... manufacturing industry. It's not just as simple as just like, oh, well, we're just going to assemble them here. Like the tariffs on those, you know, international goods are just still whatever.
But. I think it was Boeing, or there's a airplane factory that the airplanes are assembled in the United States, but like the parts are gotten from China. And sure. The problem was China couldn't buy the airplanes because of the tariffs, and mm-hmm. America couldn't make the airplanes because of the tariffs. So like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah, I now here's the thing. I don't know fucking anything about business, but I know it's going badly. Oh my goodness.
Wow, that's
good.
Now that's a good business.
Oh, it smells really good. Elena made a chickpea. What is this? A chickpea salad?
Mm-hmm. Kind of tastes, it has a little egg salad route, you know, egg salad leaning, right? Am I right?
It's like chickpeas and like avocado. What is this? Explain. Here, come here. Explain what this is.
So it's a pound of chickpeas,
mm-hmm.
and then some sliced cherry tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
and then I know that you have that weird cilantro thing, so I subbed it out for parsley, olive oil, shallots, because they didn't have any good red onions, and what did I say? Olive oil, and then lime juice.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Delicious. This is
really good.
That, yeah. All right. Well.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow, Peter.
Highly recommend.
I'm just gonna say,
found it on TikTok.
Elena, when Peter looked at you right there, the amount of love in his eyes was there.
Aw.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. Aw. Aw. Aw.
That was the first ever time we've kissed.
Oh wow! I'm glad I got to see that. That's a moment. That's
for our wedding.
Yeah, we were gonna save for a wedding. But didn't do that.
No. Your face. You were like. Like just the look on your face, you were so happy.
Never, I mean, what a moment right now! You got a snack delivered. How lovely! I'm gonna try not to just like just have all these mouth sounds in the podcast. But tariffs. Oh yeah, the tariff is just a bad idea. It's just bad. I'm not a business guy. This sucks. It's bad, right?
Yeah. I understand like the hope and the wish that, you know, America does more inside of America and stuff like that. We would have been doing that if it would have made sense for us to do that sooner.
Yes. And I think like, go on.
It impacts the globe in a way that these dominoes, it's not as simple as like you move us out and then it's fine for us. It affects everything, like the global economy, our economy, everything. It's just very like.
Do you know, like, to bring this back to video games, I think it was Mike Ybarra, maybe not him. Someone who was important at Blizzard was talking about Overwatch. And they were talking about, like, how do you properly balance a video game and how you balance something? A lot of people are like, oh, you just have to nerf things. But if you nerf stuff, it means you're taking things away from players and they don't like that. So instead, buff a different thing. You know what I mean? It's like make something else stronger so that that thing has a better counter to it. So like I look at this and I'm like, how do you incentivize businesses to work in the United States? And the government is like, well, what if we just penalize them heavily for not doing that? And it's like, okay, that sucks. like okay, you've actually just made this like way harder for this to happen. And to be honest, even in my opinion, you've incentivized non-US businesses to just say fuck it and just like figure out how to do it without us. I mean, like, look at China. China just basically said, like, we've existed before the United States, way longer before the United States. We're going to exist after the United States. Like, you are a blip on our country, on our history. It's like, damn, that's true, you know? So I think, like, instead of saying, like, incentivizing through punishment, incentivize through, like, making opportunity, right? Like, I don't know. Whatever, I suppose. I will not be surprised if and when price increases hit the PlayStation.
I think the longer they wait, the more people are going to be upset by the news, because like right now people are like, will be able to take it. And then you hear things about how like the, you know, tariff agreement, temporary pause between the US and China, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. People are going to look at Sony as being like, oh, you're just waiting and now the tariffs are down and you're going to be doing this. Well, no, it's not just those tariffs that are down. It's everything else. Like, these prices have a real impact that they've called out here. And like, I'm not asking for them to raise prices, but I think public image wise, the longer they wait, the worse it's going to be.
And it's ripping a Band-Aid off, right?
Yeah.
Like, people are upset about this right now. Let them be upset about all of it all at once, you know.
Yeah.
Or conversely, simply don't do that.
You know, I think
who knows?
They're probably going to wait until their next successful game comes out, Marathon, right? Once that's released, then they can, the goodwill of that game will allow them to raise prices, right?
Yeah, it should be good. It should be really good. Justin, it's interesting. You've mentioned Marathon. Take a look at an IGN article here. new news has come to light since even when I was looking for things before. Let me just read you this headline. A lot sort of happened with this. I think this article does a pretty good job at sort of condensing the information here. This is from IGN by Vicky Blake. Fans discuss Marathon developer Bungie's future after yet another plagiarism row rocks studio. Make no mistake, this is an existential struggle for Bungie at this point. Here is the body of this article. As Destiny 2 developer Bungie scrambles to recover its reputation after yet another independent artist accused the studio of lifting their artwork in Marathon, the community around the developer is wondering what's next. Last week's accusation prompted an immediate investigation and acknowledgement from the studio that a former Bungie artist had indeed used Fern Hook's work without compensation or credit. Then, on Friday night, Marathon game director Joe Zeigler and art director Joe Cross apologized on a painfully uncomfortable live stream that featured no Marathon art or footage at all, as the team was, quote, still scrubbing all of our assets to make sure that we are being respectful of the situation. Since then, players have been trying to untangle who the former artist is, if there even is one, as some are wondering, with some reporting that they just feel hollow. Others wonder whether Marathon can still succeed at all and what a flop would mean for the storied studio. This game went from mixed/negative reception to plagiarism will make me god. 4 months from launch in the eyes of the larger game community. If they don't delay it, it's 100% dead on arrival, suggested one player. If the game does in fact die, we're talking over $100 million lost, plus possibly a gross underestimate for a AAA game studio. So yeah, really bad. What do you think about this? So they stole art. They stole art and it is extremely clear that they stole this. What do you think of all of this?
Okay, so like the first thing I'm going to say here, I'm gonna might sound like a little bit of a little apologist here, is that sometimes you can have bad actors in a studio or in a company that impact the upper company that had no knowledge or knowing about what was happening to a certain degree. That happens. But
I go on.
In a situation like this, like there's so many weird things about all of this that came out, and there's not even like a fall man per se that they're like putting kind of like the blame on this, because this seems to be more of a systematic decision, problem, influence, rather than it being like a bad actor at the company.
Well, let me say this. I think in isolation, yes, that's true. This is not Bungie's first time with this. So let me read you the four plagiarism problems that they've had in the last 4 years. 2021. This is from at Rose Saddle. I'm sending you this on our Discord. 2021, Destiny Witch Queen trailer. There was an artist called Mal A, and they used fan art of some character in the trailer without credit. In 2023, there was a cutscene in Destiny 2 from an artist named Julian Faylona. They used a near identical fan art in a cutscene. They just apologized and they paid the artist. 2024, Destiny 2, Ace of Spades Nerf Gun, which is one of the in-game items, at Tofu Rabbit. They copied the design for the Nerf Gun, including like detailed portions of the weapon, and they just put it in the game without crediting the artist. They compensated them, credited them eventually. And then now, all of this environmental art for the game has been stolen from Anti-Real, and it's a fuck ton. It's a fuck ton of stuff. Bungie responded, obviously, like apologizing and saying like they're trying to scrub it and take it down. But like this happened. They have a history of this, right? And so like, okay, yes, you're right. Like, you know, did the executives or did the art team look at each other and say like, we need to steal. That's how we're going to like, you know, get our concept art, get our stuff in here. No, of course not. But they clearly have a pattern with this of not being able to credit people if they're using things, or fully just stealing, what in the case of this marathon stuff, in the case of the Nerf gun thing, you know what I mean? Like to me, that's where I start to say like, you're right. It's probably not someone who's just sitting there being like, we need to steal stuff, but they do have a history of this, you know?
Well, no. And that's why, like, when it comes to a systematic thing, like you got to think about how it happens once, shame on you, twice, shame on me, three times, oops, four times, fuck. And like, I think part of it is like, you got to start building systems in place for this kind of stuff. And while, again, I don't want to just apologize for Bungie here. I mean, this kind of like theft in like creative intellectual property borrowing is only going to be starting to get worse and worse and worse for two reasons.
Oh, yeah.
AI.
It's AI.
Number one.
It's already doing it.
Number two, people who grow up still not quite knowing how to cite information, where they get it from, and in many cases, not truly knowing what they're doing is plagiarism or is something that is inappropriate. And
yes,
I think like there's a lot that can go into this with art in general, but like this stuff is going to keep happening more and more. And if companies don't think of a way to stop this kind of stuff from happening, it's going to be a problem. I would be really interested to see, and it's still like early in the infancy of it, like if how many things that have been created have used like ChatGPT without crediting the use of ChatGPT or other AI bots and stuff like that, because I'm sure that happens on a level that we're not even comfortable with knowing or understanding, from artwork to television to movies to Oscar-winning things. Like, I'm sure we start looking into this, it's going to be something that is quite scary to find out how widespread of an issue this is.
And you know what I hate too? I hate that it has caused me to doubt everything.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And like, I've gotten comments on my videos, people saying like, damn, this is like clearly AI generated, which is like the most offensive thing you could possibly say to me. Like, to be honest with you, I'm like heartbroken. I mean, obviously, like, you know, those sorts of comments don't get me down, because they're not. Like, literally none of it is. But like, I have caught myself wondering if I'm watching something, like, to be entirely honest with you, I know I dislike it. I know I'm a hater, but I have seen other people say this, and this is what got me wondering it, because it's just not where I go to, because I'm just assuming that no one else is using AI. I'm like, did AI write the Last of Us script? You know what I mean? Like, was there not all of it, but like, is there some bits of like AI in there? Because I just find it so wooden and stiff and non-human, you know? Here's the thing. Sometimes art is just bad, right? Like, sometimes you just don't like it, and that's fine. Like, I don't know. But like, to me, it is just this thing where you're totally right. This stuff is going to become more common and more difficult to track, because like, now I know you're a school teacher, so don't let your kids hear this, because I imagine they know this, but like, it's really easy to plagiarize with AI. And obviously all AI, like written AI, all generative AI is plagiarism. However, you can just throw, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs of plagiarized text into that and say, like, rewrite this in a way that doesn't make it sound like it's plagiarized. You know what I mean? And then it just launders it for you, you know?
Or even like less obvious, write it for me, write it again for me. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't even have to be like start off with someone's actual stuff, but like at a certain point, as you're doing that, where is that information getting pulled from? Where are the trends getting pulled from? Is it like being programmed off of other people's work, which it is, and it's been shown to do that kind of stuff? Like, it's this whole kind of rabbit hole of circle of confusion that like the idea of intellectual property is so confusing when it shouldn't be. I made this, I own it, but nowadays, wait a second, what?
Well, and it's funny too, because like these AI companies know that they're stealing. They know that they are stealing, but they can't, but like they don't care. And our government doesn't care. And so it just is what it is.
Well, which is
insanely frustrating.
It's shame on like not having a better way to regulate this kind of stuff.
And I also think it's shame on like, I think I hate the people who create this, obviously, because like it puts people out of jobs and whatever else. But I also think like it is just this like such a narrow idea of like why we like art and why we do anything. You know what I mean? In the arts, because it's like we don't just make stuff because it looks cool. Like, you know, art means things and like it's important to us. And so like the idea of like, well, I can just do this with this. I can just write this with this. It's like, yeah, but you like you're missing the point of why we do this. And there's like an intentionality behind writing and language and stuff that like it just doesn't do, you know? And it's just so frustrating because I'm like, you sound like a boring, infuriating person to talk to, you know? If you see, I mean, like it's like a Photoshop has that just the generative fill stuff. And it's like, man, what would the Abbey Road album cover look like if we just see more stuff? Oh my gosh, there's another guy on the road. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Anyway. Yeah, this marathon stuff is bad. It's really bad. And people are saying that at the studio, morale is at like an all-time low, which is impressive given sort of where that studio has been in the past like year and a half. Also the alpha impressions are not particularly positive. Still, I think we've covered that before. I know what you're wondering, Justin, who has Destiny, not Destiny, Marathon on our fantasy league? I could see you reaching for your computer to look it up.
Am I? Sure.
Me, I haven't. And
are you dropping
it? I'm holding the line. We're going to get to the beta, the open beta. And at that point, we will know. At that point, we will absolutely know. And then that'll be what it is. Only two of my games, by the way, have come out this year so far.
Yeah, I haven't picked up something in a while. I probably should.
Yeah, but Summer Game Fest is around the corner. Like, you're going to get stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to start going crazy when Nintendo announces a remake of Ocarina of Time.
But I mean, that's the thing. We still have time. So there you go. Justin, here's something. Call of Duty Warzone Mobile. Are you familiar with it?
Play it every day.
I know you do. You get all those dailies. It is ending its service this week, quite quickly. According to the Twitter account for Warzone Mobile. Let me just read you this here. We deeply appreciate your dedication and passion for Call of Duty Warzone Mobile. Going forward, we will be streamlining the scope of the game. This decision was made after careful consideration of various factors, and while we're proud of the accomplishment in bringing Call of Duty Warzone to mobile in an authentic way, it unfortunately has not met our expectations with mobile-first players like it has with PC and console audiences. As a result, we will no longer be delivering new seasonal content and gameplay updates to the mobile version. Effective immediately, players will no longer be able to purchase Call of Duty points or Black Sal using real currency in Call of Duty Warzone Mobile. Sunday, May 18th, which was yesterday, will be the last day the game can be downloaded from the Google Play and Apple Store App Store. And social features across both mobile platforms will be retired. Players who have the game installed before will still have access to the game with continued cross-progression of shared inventories using existing content and servers with matchmaking for online play. Any unspent Call of Duty points can be redeemed in-game towards available content in the store. We know this news may be disappointing, and we truly appreciate the passion, support, feedback, and dedication from our community. We have special incentives for Call of Duty Warzone Mobile players in Call of Duty Mobile and are encouraging our players to try it for free. So Call of Duty Mobile is not shutting down, but Warzone Mobile is shutting down, which normally, like, this isn't news to me. But the thing I think is interesting about this is that Microsoft said that its purchase of Activision Blizzard was not about Call of Duty. It was not about Diablo or Overwatch or whatever. They said that they bought it really for their mobile department. And now you have this giant fucking game, Call of Duty Warzone Mobile, shutting down. And it's this question about, like, so what's up with that? You know, obviously they have the numbers on if it is worth it for them to continue pursuing this specific game. Call of Duty Mobile isn't going anywhere, but it does make you wonder, why is this happening? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the game has been out for a little over a year at this point, so it's not like it has been around that long. I'm trying to think about, like, on your phone and stuff like that. Like, Call of Duty, like, makes sense in, like, quick little bursts. Warzone makes less sense to me, just because those games can be a little bit longer.
Yeah, I will say this. We are not the market for this.
Right.
It is kids with iPads.
iPad babies.
And it is, yeah, and it is overseas.
Yeah.
Like, mobile gaming, you know, we know is fucking gigantic in Asia, especially. And PUBG Mobile is fucking huge out there. And Apex Mobile and all these mobile apps for this are as big. So I just wonder what is going on over there.
Right, and then why is the regular Call of Duty still okay, but not Warzone? You know what I mean? Like, at a certain point, yeah, like, it's just odd to me that this wouldn't hit and it doesn't have the kind of support that it would. So I wonder if it's the gameplay. I wonder if it's just oversaturation at this point. People are, like, locked in to playing Call of Duty Mobile or whatever mobile game that they're playing right now. 'Cause it's free, right?
Yeah, it is. I wonder if, to that point, maybe they've just, like, actually, like, split the market. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what? It'll just be better for us if we just shut this down and just move everyone to Call of Duty Mobile.
Yeah.
I imagine that's the bigger platform because it's been around longer. So maybe that's it, but it's weird. I don't know. I just think it's odd that, like, Xbox has said, like, hey, we're going all in on phones. And then every news story I hear about Xbox and mobile, it's always just, like, a nightmare.
Well, and then on top of that, too, Warzone Mobile doesn't have cross play with PC or console players. So that's even, like, kind of fracturing your market even more,
even
to
further.
A point that makes it more difficult. And again, I don't know about Call of Duty because, again, as you're saying, this isn't our market. But, like, I don't know. Just it's an odd thing to happen so soon in the process, too. Again, they probably made this decision within a year of it being released. If they're going to end it now,
yeah.
Like, I don't know.
It's odd.
Too many games to play. Too much time consuming content and not enough time to play it.
I agree.
If you could break your focus to play two games at once, would you? Or would you focus everything on one game?
Probably focus everything on one game.
So you'd be a one lightsaber guy instead of two lightsaber guy?
I just don't think I trust myself with that. If it just can cut through anything, well, I'm going to spin them both around.
Right. Come on, yeah. I mean, I think they'd be too dangerous. And like, one would be your offhand. I do like Ahsoka's little like smaller one she holds a little one. Bit, yeah. You know, so she have that like dual flexibility. But at the same time, like.
I like, I don't remember who described it like this, but in Jedi Fallen Order, when you get the double bladed one, they're like, I like that Cal doesn't use it like Darth Maul does. He uses it really fucking carefully because it's like he's a lightsaber with two, like both ends of a lightsaber.
Dangerous, man. It's, like yeah, one little dangerous. Mistake.
Yeah. Speaking of lightsabers and the like, you see about this AI voice Darth Vader in Fortnite?
What a!
I believe this is the first. What's that?
What a weird thing you just said.
It's not going to get better. So Fortnite introduced what I believe is the first commercially available, fully AI voiced video game character. You can go find Darth Vader in the Fortnite map and you can literally talk to him using your microphone and he will talk back. Now, what I think is interesting, we were talking about this with AI before, is that like the technology fucking sucks. Like he's not like making like very clear sentences or statements. He clearly like. It doesn't understand a whole lot. It's not a very, like the technology is not very good. And on top of that, people have tricked him into saying slurs and swear words, and he's not supposed to do that. And it is a game that is not rated age rated for that. And so I think they had to take him down for like immediately.
How do you take down Darth Vader, man? Many have tried.
You actually have to melt his heart. No. Yeah. You have to, you know, show him that there's familial bonds that persist throughout, you know.
Is Darth Vader the story of the Grinch?
I'll say this. He's not the story of Joel from The Last of Us.
Can you imagine if he's...
Luke takes it way better, though.
If I only were.
Yeah, you didn't say that. Well, Justin, if you wanted him to sing it, you could ask him in Fortnite to do it. That said, there are some problems here. Hey, so first of all, James Earl Jones has passed away. And so his estate has given consent to do this. And I imagine in giving consent to do this, a lot of money was given to them as well. But SAG-AFTRA, the Actors Guild, Screen Actors Guild, has filed for an unfair lobby practice charge against Epic Games for using AI for Darth Vader's voice in Fortnite. That is from Discussing Film on Twitter. Let me read you their claim here. We celebrate the right of our members and their estates to control the use of their digital replicas and welcome the use of new technologies to allow new generations to share in the enjoyment of those legacies and renowned roles. However, we must protect our right to bargain terms and conditions around uses of voice that replace the work of our members, including those who previously did the work of matching Darth Vader's iconic rhythm and tone in video games. Fortnite's signatory company, Llama Productions, chose to replace the work of human performers with AI technology. Unfortunately, they did so without providing any notice of their intent to do this and without bargaining with us over appropriate terms. As such, we have filed an unfair labor practice charge with the NLRB against Llama Productions. A copy of the filing can be found here. So a lot of people don't understand this. A lot of people are saying like, well, you know, if his estate consented, it's fine. That's not how labor laws work. It's just not. And the problem isn't, as SAG-AFTRA says, it's not the problem that they said, yeah, go ahead and, you know, use a digital double of him. Right. Like, that's not the problem. The problem is that by using AI, you have taken jobs away from voice actors. For example, the guy who does the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars Jedi series has been playing him since like 2001 or something like that. And they for real took this guy, like AI took this guy's job, or if not him, you and me, because, you know, we were next on the list in terms of doing our impressions. Obviously, they were so good doing The Last of Us song.
They liked it.
Yeah. So a lot of people are like clowning on this, pretending to be dumber than they actually are. Like, read this and you understand what the problem here is. Justin, I'm curious what you think about this.
It's complicated because I'm trying to find, like, again, I don't have the, I didn't do the previous research as well as I could. And I think this really comes down to an interesting question is who has the rights of their voice to a certain degree. Yeah. Like, does it change your mind if James Earl Jones, before his passing, said, you can use my voice to Disney? You give me this money, you can use this
for
voice.
For AI?
Yes.
Yes. Because the problem is not him consenting to you to give his voice for things like that. Because he did do that. They used AI for one of the Star Wars projects. They did do that. And they used the fucking Luke Skywalker AI and stuff like that. The problem is the work violations of it. Do you know what I mean? Of cutting out workers. That's the problem to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because you consent to whatever. Yes, it's your voice. You know, if you want to, I guess, sign it away forever in exchange for a large sum of money. Sure, whatever. Do that. I think it's ghoulish a lot of the time. Like, I think about like Peter Cushing, the guy who played Grand Moff Tarkin in the original Star Wars. They did the CG version of him in Rogue One, and I think it looks like terrible. It's like, I think it looks really weird and very, very, I think it's odd. I think just like recast. I think that's a very simple thing to do. But at the end of the day, they're not cutting a worker out. There's still a worker who's involved with that. You know what I mean? There's an actor who's doing all that sort of stuff and doing the line reads and stuff like that. They're just doing a digital double on top of that worker, on top of that actor. I think it's weird, but I think that's perfectly fine to do. It's the AI of this that I don't appreciate and don't like.
Well, even taking out, like, going back to the individual's voice, I'm James Earl Jones.
What?
Just pretend.
Oh.
Disney hires cheaper actor.
I was like, you're alive?
Disney hires cheaper actor to play my voice. It's much cheaper to get Joe Schmo, who can do an impersonation of my voice, than me to do an impersonation of my voice. The person doing the voice that Disney hires sounds just like me as James Earl Jones doing Darth Vader. Is that okay?
Well, I think it really depends. I think it comes down to contracts, right? So, like, obviously, other people were doing Darth Vader for Disney products, right? And so, like this guy, who's the guy who plays Darth Vader? Darth Vader.
Anakin.
Actor. Jedi Fallen Order. That is Scott Lawrence. He's played Darth Vader a lot. Since 1994, by the way. So 100%, I think that the problem there is in contract, right? James Earl Jones has the contract of, you are the guy we are going to, you know, we've, you know, signed you for a three movie deal, let's say. And then from there, then we renegotiate contracts and we take a look at that sort of stuff. If they were like, and you were going to be Darth Vader on all the video games and TV shows and everything else, and then they gave it to a different person, that is a problem, right? Because then that is cutting an actor out of their what they're owed. However, if that is not what is in their contract, that it just isn't the understanding, then no, I don't think that's a problem. Because what's stopping James Earl Jones from auditioning for those roles? Well, because he's a classically trained actor who doesn't give a fuck about video games. You know what I mean? Like, and also those roles, like, he is overqualified for them. He is not in their budget. That's not a problem. They're going to hire someone else, right? Like, a CEO of Starbucks is not going to come and try and work an entry-level position because that's just not worth his time. And everyone there knows it. You know what I mean? Like, no, it's a different thing.
I agree with you on like all this stuff. Like, but my problem is like, his voice doing Darth Vader is being imitated by someone else doing Darth Vader because Disney doesn't want to spend money to give him the fair wages that him as James Earl Jones should receive for being Darth Vader.
Well, but that's not how it works, though, right? I mean, it's about like scope of a project, right? Budget of this project is, let's say, $3 million of some game. That's obviously not a real number, but like, let's say it's from 1994 or whatever. $3 million is the entire budget of this game. Well, to get James Earl Jones in the door and do these reading, it's going to be $1 million because he's James Earl Jones, right? He was Mufasa. He was fucking, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's like, that's just not who, they just can't get him. You know what I mean? So like, I don't think that's a problem.
Well, no,
I imagine when you sign these contracts with these films and stuff, you are also signing away, obviously, your likeness. And so they can recreate your likeness with other actors and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, when you do that, though, it's Disney doing that at a cheaper rate than what James Earl Jones would. So they're basically undercutting him. Like, does every time they have to, like, every time they have to do a Darth Vader thing or something like that, I'm sure contractually they don't have to go to James Earl Jones and be like, we're going to either right. offer you $20 or we're going to hire this person for $20. Right.
Right.
So the thing that I'm trying to like think about here is they're always going to try to find something for what the scope of the cost is. They're always going to be looking for something that is going to be a more cost efficient thing than going to the creator, right? Is it like if I can't afford an original Van Gogh in my house, am I going to like try to get something inspired by Van Gogh if I'm into Van Gogh? Am I going to get a replica of Van Gogh if I'm into Van Gogh? Like at a certain point, when we're thinking about these companies using AI and stuff like that, they are always going to be defaulting to AI because that is always going to be cheaper than not, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, Van Gogh or whoever owns the rights to Van Gogh's paintings will, you know, and that in itself is a whole thing, right? About like who owns whatever. But like, if you are buying a knockoff replica, I'm not trying to put morality on that, right?
But yeah.
You understand that, like, I'm talking about this, like, isolated, whatever, and not literally. Then that's the shitty thing, because you're buying something that's stolen, right? But if it's a licensed thing, and I'm talking about this in an analogy for what we're talking about here. James Earl Jones understands and consented to that as a concept when signing on to be Darth Vader. Right. Or eventually at a certain point with whatever contracts he signed it to be whatever. He understands that they are going to do this and that it's probably not going to be worth his time. I bet Star Wars Battlefront 2 would have fucking lost their shit if he wanted to be in it. But probably not, because it's not worth his time in terms of how much it is and for the pedigree that he has, you know. So like, I think the difference here is that there is the understanding of that by signing the contract. That sort of stuff is covered in the contract, and if those companies do something that is in breach of those contracts, then of course it is within that actor's right to either not sign with them again or, you know, settle with it for however they want to settle with it. And with AI, the problem for me with all of this is that by using the AI, it is a breach of the contract that the actors have with those studios.
The unions or the actors? Because, like, if he gave a...
The union, sorry.
Okay.
Because the actors... I mean, actors... Well, then that's the other thing, too, is, like, a lot of actors have been told, like, have had their hands forced. I know Ashley Birch talked about this when there was the Horizon thing, where she was just like, they told me that this is happening, and that this is just what it is. Mm. It's like, fuck. You know? Like... Because it's like her voice wasn't able to be used, but obviously her facial capture is what informs a lot of Aloy's stuff. And so all of that is not hers. I don't know. I would have to look at what the SAG-AFTRA stuff on voice ownership is with AI stuff. But it's that thing where it's like hand is forced because she is not James Earl Jones, who would be fine without the work of being Darth Vader 100th time, you know?
Right. I wonder where the tipping point is going to be, though. Because ultimately, like, when will these companies not need these unions anymore?
Now.
You know what I mean? Like, that. Now. Like, that's part of it. Like, sure, they can get sued by the union, but the only thing this is going to do is fuel these companies for looking for alternative, cheaper ways to, like, get around this kind of stuff. And I don't know how long this contract is. It's not a forever contract. What's the next contract going to be?
I here's the thing I worry about too, not worry about, but like I'm thinking about like, here's who Epic actually has to worry about: Disney. Because I watched a video of Darth Vader say fuck, and then also say some homophobic slurs. That is not good for brand recognition or brand, there's a word for it, whatever it is. That's not good for the brand to have an officially licensed Star Wars product having Darth Vader say the F slur. That's not good. Well, and Disney's going to be very upset about
that. It's baffling to me, too, on top of all of this, that they thought this would be a good idea, because if it's an AI learning model, it's a learning model. Like, this is like, is this the first step of Skynet taking over? You can't control a Darth Vader AI from not swearing. Like, you're forcing it to swear. Like, you're basically putting this, like, learning system in there, and you're hoping that it just listens to the good parts of what people say?
Insane. Insane that you would not just be like, oh, this is actually quite bad. You know, like, it's a bad idea. I think it's just a bad idea. And I also think, like, who wants this? Who wants this?
Epic.
But that's the thing. It's like, but who playing it is like, you know what I really, really, really want? I want to have, like, just a meaningless conversation with Darth Vader where he doesn't say anything of note. He doesn't really understand me. And then he calls me the F slur. Cool. Great.
I think there are plenty of people out there who want a friend to talk to when they're playing. Because isn't it set up kind of like a chatbot, like, as you're just, like, playing?
That I'm not super sure. I do know that I think you have to go find him. Mm-hmm.
And then he talks to you.
And then you can talk to him, yeah.
So I don't know. I this all comes back to this idea that I don't know what the next 10 years are going to be looking like, but it's going to be a scary 10 years for a lot of different people in a lot of different industries.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what the answers are.
I'll tell you what makes me feel better is when I do get comments like, LOL, clearly written by AI, is I just go, I don't respond. I'm just like, nope. Nope.
Well, you can answer that, but, like, enough of those comments come on there, it could be a significant, like, issue for anyone, not just you, but for anything. You know,
100%. Yeah, totally. Oh, Justin. Yeah, I don't know. Don't know. It's a bummer. I think that's it.
You know, it's not a bummer.
Tell me.
The Last of Us season 2.
Yeah, I was literally pacing in my house when I was watching it last night. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Making all the dogs start barking downstairs. Like, yeah. Let's talk about The Last of Us. We have to actually end this show. And then we'll talk about it. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Thanks to our Patreon producers, Jane Holgcast and Josh Durham. Subscribe there if you like at Hitbox Pod on Blue Sky. Rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. If you're interested in our conversation about The Last of Us season 2, episode 6, we're getting into it right now. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.